As you scroll through social media on your phone or your computer, there's a strong chance there's misinformation filtering through about next month's federal election. That's certainly what the Australian Electoral Commission is reporting, with a worrying jump in false claims about the country's voting system.
We're seeing a really significant amount, Patricia, more than we've seen previously. The perennial one is that the AEC is erasing your ballot, and a range of other ones, that some of which are bordering on unhinged. And for the first time ever, we've set up a disinformation register where we come across a piece of mis or disinformation. We put that online so that people are aware of it. We're also running a large campaign, Patricia, called Stop and Consider, where we're asking people to think about the source of information that they're reading.
Keeping on top of that is going to be an enormous job, and now other experts are lending a hand by using new technology to monitor and to combat the spread of false claims. One of those experts is Joree Craig, head of digital integrity at international think tank, the Institute for Strategic Dialogue. Welcome to the program.
Thanks so much for having me.
You've worked to tackle misinformation right around the world, from the United States to Europe. You've come to Australia to work on our election. Why?
Well, more and more, especially after the pandemic, where so many online communities were brought together over a shared experience of not trusting government protocols around COVID or just being frustrated with the pandemic in generally, more and more we're seeing these online communities share and trade tactics across borders. And so Australia is just one of many elections that is another petri dish for bad actors to really experiment with as they try out tactics to sort of sow distrust in elections and election systems.
Have you already seen misinformation spreading in Australia?
Sure, yes. We are seeing, as the AEC points out, we are seeing conspiratorial claims and also disinformation claims. So the difference between mis and disinformation being misinformation is if I share something that's false or misleading by accident, and disinformation being if I'm sharing that misleading information with an agenda. So where we see claims about worrying concerns around the election or how to vote, you know, that are really very clearly debunked by the AEC, that's more likely to be disinformation. And we are seeing some of those claims. One example is something really just straight up exported out of the U.S., which has to do with voting machines that are not used here and will not be used here unless there's a legislative change. So it does show just a very clear example of how these things are really just shared across borders.
Are you expecting to see an increase in false claims in the coming weeks? And what form would you expect it to take?
So I think more than false claims, we look at things that are trying to evoke an emotional reaction or tap into some sort of emotional reaction from the audience and get them to move in a specific direction. So whether it is trying to get them to be confused or maybe mistrust something going on, or rather just sort of sow doubt in what the other opposing candidate is saying. We're looking at claims like that because it's not simply fact or fiction. It is really more, is it misleading? Is it out of context? And that's why fact-checking programs like what RMIT FactLab is doing alongside the ISD and JNI will be important, just so voters have the full context of the claims that are being made.
The deliberate or accidental spread of misinformation is a problem that voters and tech companies have been talking about a lot in recent years. In the recent elections in Germany and France, has the spread of misinformation had much of an impact?
Yes, well, certainly. I mean, in Germany and most recently in the first round of the French elections, we saw the way in which both candidates took a top-down approach of sharing false or misleading claims and then seeing how that sort of runs like wildfire on social media. But we also see how the social media business models and the algorithms that they use to try to suggest content to keep people on their platforms is also pulling people more and more toward extreme claims, toward false information. And so it's a combination of this sort of top-down approach that some individuals will take, but also these systems underlying the way information moves with today's technology.
How distinct is the situation in Australia? Are the challenges here largely similar to other Western nations?
Well, I will say because the majority of Australians speak English, it's easier for them to trade sort of direct lines out of places like the US, where you do have so much money pumped into election campaigns and therefore quite a bit of mis and disinformation to be available to be shared. But I will say that we've seen, you know, some of the movements that carry conspiracies, maybe movements that were upset around COVID protocols in Australia, you know, part of the anti-vaccine movement. We've seen those communities try to experiment with other conspiracies related to their frustration with election processes or candidates, and we don't see them have as much momentum. So one very specific, unique aspect of the Australian context is compulsory voting. So in other places, we might have to worry about suppression campaigns, sort of just wearing voters down so they're so not interested that they don't turn out. And in Australia, you have the sort of protection of having this compulsory voting component. So that is a distinctive feature. Another distinctive feature of Australia are the diaspora communities, where English is not a first language. We know mis- and disinformation can disproportionately go unchecked in those communities that speak other languages. And so that's something that fact checkers and anyone doing these types of investigations has to be considering.
So where is the risk going to come from? Is it going to come from politicians doing scare campaigns, from grassroots groups, or is it more likely to come from hostile foreign governments?
It's a great question. So foreign actors, politicians, all of them have been sharing propaganda or political spin for as long as, you know, humans have really been around. Social media, though, and that business model underlying it is what makes us really worried and have to be extra on top of this. It's what makes those claims move rapid fire. And so whether it's politicians or whether it's state-backed campaigns, the fact that they're moving these things on social media and that those business models are really sort of helping to accelerate those claims is what we worry about. We know that there's been quite a bit of state-backed activity around the Russian-Ukraine war. We are looking for that. We don't see early signs of that influencing the election here, but it surely could. And so for now, I think that we can count on politicians making claims that need to be checked. But I think it'll be a question of how state-backed politicians and then just online communities and sort of individuals who have sort of found an interest in spreading conspiracies, how they play into this election as well.
You're working with RMIT to track and to counter misinformation, and you'll be using something I understand is called the Beam to do that. It sounds very sci-fi like it, the Beam. What is it? How does it work?
Sure. So what's distinct about the technology that ISD has developed with our partners at Chasm is that it looks at social media activity across platforms. So unfortunately, the social media companies, and we won't get into why they do this, they don't give researchers the full picture that they'd need to actually look at everything that's going on. However, what they do give us, we take that and we look at how information moves, not just within a specific platform like Facebook or like Instagram or like Twitter, but how that information is moving across those different platforms. And that can help us understand really what kind of momentum something has or whether it's staying in a very closed community or an echo chamber, if you will.
How worried are you about this increasing threat to democracy?
Well, you know, I'm from the US, and after what happened on January 6th, which was largely sort of foreseen on social media, I'm worried about any election context where there are still these social media systems that, while the social media companies promise to put things in place and promise to put protections in place, we still don't see them consistently enforcing those policies they put in place. So I'm worried. I do have faith in the electorate. I think that people are smart, and I think people are able to do what the AEC says and stop and consider. And so that gives me a lot of hope. But I just encourage people to be talking to their friends and family about what they see. And if they see something they're not sure about, just look for a resource. There's a tip line, and I'm sure there will be several tip lines out there. And just take it easy, and if someone's trying to get you to have an emotional reaction to something, you might second guess that.
Yeah. Yes, it's always a bit of a giveaway. Jory, thank you.
Of course. Thank you for having me.
Jory Craig is the head of digital integrity at international think tank, the Institute for Strategic Dialogue.